The most recent attempt to redraw voting districts in Illinois has failed again. Last night, the Illinois Supreme Court rebuffed the independent maps amendment effort. We'll get reaction from that coalition. Yesterday, the Obama administration put a spotlight on retirement savings for private sector workers. Today, we talked to a financial planner, a healthy aging researcher, and Savoy resident Jerry Easton about retiring well.
You really need to take care of your health. You got to make sure you live long enough to enjoy your retirement.
And it's Friday. We get you ready for the weekend with an in-studio performance by the Illinois jazz band Tromberry. They're playing tomorrow night in Normal alongside a documentary about the late saxophonist Thomas Chapin.
He was really a unique artist in that he always was in the moment. You always felt like he was playing his heart out at all times.
That's all this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. It's Friday. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Yesterday, a day before the deadline to have measures on the November ballot, Illinois Supreme Court ruled against an initiative that would change the way legislative districts are drawn in the state. The Independent Maps Coalition gathered more than 500,000 registered voter signatures in support of their effort. But for the second time, a court blocked the overhaul from the ballot. We'll talk with the campaign manager for Independent Maps in a minute, but first, some of the reaction. The court was split 4-3 along partisan lines. Democratic justices sided with the lower court ruling to block the maps initiative, at least in its current form. Republican Justice Bob Thomas wrote a dissenting opinion. In it, he argued that the four justices in the majority had just nullified a, quote, critical component of the Illinois Constitution. The challenge to the proposal was led by a group called the People's Map. Its lawyer has long had ties to the Illinois Democratic Party and House Speaker Michael Madigan. That group argued placing the legislature with an independent map-making commission could harm underrepresented groups of voters. Republican Governor Bruce Rauner supports the effort to overhaul the map drawing system. He put out a statement after yesterday's ruling, saying last night in part, quote, the system is broken and controlled by career politicians. We're going to tweet out links with plenty of reaction. The court's ruling in dissent. If you follow 21ST Show, that's 21st Show on Twitter, you can read all of that information there. Joining me now is Dave Millay. He's the campaign manager with the Independent Map Amendment. Dave, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for taking the time with us this morning. I know busy morning for you in Chicago. Dave?
Sorry, very busy. Thanks for
having Yeah. me. And I know today was the day you were hoping to see this proposal put on the ballot. Instead, it's back to square one. What's your reaction to the Supreme Court's decision last night?
It's extremely disappointing. The decision as it stands would make it almost impossible for the citizens of Illinois to in any way change their constitution and fix problems that the legislature refuses to fix for themselves. And that's really why this was created, so that the citizens could address things like redistricting, where there was a conflict of interest for the legislature and they would never put a substantive measure on the ballot to reform that issue.
What do you think the court based its ruling on?
Well, it was a 4-3 vote on straight partisan lines, so it appears to be a very partisan split. We don't think that they really dug deep into the Constitutional Convention records and looked at what the intent of the framers of the Constitution was, which to us was the most important thing. And when they drafted this provision in the Constitution, they said that they wanted to prevent this from allowing voters to propose really large issues like legalizing marijuana, for example, or outlawing abortion. They didn't want that California-style initiative process, but they did want it to be able to correct problems with the legislature. So they didn't want to restrict things like what we're proposing. They just wanted to restrict those other larger issues. And we believe that this was a misinterpretation of the intent of the framers.
You know, as you mentioned, there is a high bar you are facing on this. There's only one citizen initiative that's changed to change a state constitution that's passed Supreme Court scrutiny, and that was in 1980. Why did you think this would have been different?
Well, the reason that only one has succeeded is because this has not been attempted very many times. To get onto the ballot, we required 290,000 valid petition signatures, which in reality means that we need to get about twice that just to make sure we have enough signatures. So we submitted over 564,000 signatures to put this on the ballot. That alone is a very difficult threshold. And the court has only ruled a handful of times on these types of initiatives. So just to get that far along in the process is very difficult. There's no opportunity for the citizens to draft an amendment and have the Attorney General or the Supreme Court review it before they spend millions of dollars getting on the ballot promoting the initiative. So it's a very daunting process, and that's the main reason that it's been so difficult to get this done. I don't think that the language of the Constitution itself has been as much of an impediment as the process.
And Dave, the court's ruling focused on two issues, as you've been sort of talking about them, issue of structural and procedural under the Constitution and the role of the Auditor General. Justice Kilbride actually went so far as to write in the opinion, quote, "Our decision is not intended to reflect in any way on the viability of other possible redistricting reform initiatives." Given that, are you intending to address the issues that came up, try again in 2018? Where do you go from here?
Well, there are two options right now. One is that our organization could ask the court to reconsider their opinion. It's something that people are permitted to do. It's a long shot, but our attorneys could say, well, we think that you should look at this again and maybe see if there are some things where you might have been incorrect. And another organization could take this ruling and possibly decide to try to put something on the 2018 or the 2020 ballot. But one of the main problems with the ruling itself is the Supreme Court, in their majority opinion, basically said, well, this is unconstitutional because of the Auditor General's role, but they didn't really address anything about what is constitutional. There's no roadmap here that says, here's how it would be constitutional, here's a process that we think would work. And that's a little bit cynical, and it makes it very difficult for us. They're basically telling the citizens of Illinois that you need to go out and you need to get another 600,000 signatures, you need to draft another amendment, and spend millions of dollars just to get to the point again where maybe we'll put this on the ballot and maybe not.
Dave Millay is the campaign manager for the Independent MAP Amendment, joining us to talk about yesterday afternoon's Supreme Court decision. Dave, thanks for being with us.
No problem. Thank you.
Yesterday, the Obama administration put a spotlight on retirement savings for private sector workers, laying out a roadmap for states to encourage private sector employers to offer automatic payroll deduction. Money is often something people have regrets about when they retire, but it's not the only thing. We were inspired by a Washington Post story earlier this summer where people highlighted their regrets upon entering retirement, like taking more risks, following dreams, even being better financially prepared. And we've been asking retirees their advice about this, how to avoid regrets. Here's Delroy Robinson from Savoy.
Too often people stay in one position, look for different opportunities so you stay stimulated. And, you know, I probably would have traveled a little bit more, maybe spend a little bit more time with the family because work takes the life out of you and then you've got to catch up.
Are there things you wish you would have known if you could do it all over again? Would you change anything? You can give us a call and let us know now. Our number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet to us at 21st Show, 21st Show. Joining us in studio to talk about this, or talk especially about financial planning and strategies for saving, Sharon Allen is with us. She's the president and co-founder of Sterling Wealth Management in downtown Champaign. Sharon, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're also joined by Elizabeth Stein Morrow. She's a professor of educational psychology at the Beckman Institute at the University of Illinois. She's here to share tips with us, especially her research she's done on keeping your brain healthy through the retirement years. Liz, thank you for being with us as well.
Great to be here.
As always, if you want to join us again, our number is 1-800-222-9455. Sharon, I want to start with you, especially as we're thinking about the Obama administration putting a spotlight on retirement savings. We can talk about this a little bit later. Illinois has some specific things already enacted. That's taking place next year, and we can talk about the specifics of that. I just want to start more broadly. In your work with clients who are already retired, Do you hear from them? Do they say, I wish I had done things differently, I wish I had planned better? Do you hear that often?
Well, oftentimes people come to our table because they want a better plan. They start down the road to retirement and realize maybe they didn't have the right co-pilot or maybe they didn't have one at all to help them land successfully in retirement. And so, yeah, I do hear that. I hear people, similar to what Delroy had shared earlier, they wish they would have maybe taken a little bit more time during their working years to enjoy life more. And I think with retirees, when we work with them or near retirees, you have to start with the end in mind. And what do you want that picture of your life to look like? And if that picture of your life is enjoying life, then it's not too late to make sure you get the right roadmap in place to get to where you want to be.
We are taking your calls and suggestions on this as well. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to Jerry in Charleston. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to the 21st. What's your advice? Or if you
Thank
have
you.
Regrets you wanted to share, you can do that too.
Just a couple of things. Of course, I was in education 45 years, so I was an avid reader and I read a lot about what you need to do to make retirement enjoyable. And so I have some things that I have followed closely. One, maintain healthy habits, eat right, sustain healthy weight, exercise regularly, find ways to utilize your skills, expertise, education to remain connected, and to be a giver, not just a taker. And the way you do that is volunteer.
Oh,
so I've been
yeah.
involved with Habitat for Humanity many years, with the Salvation Army 20 years, and I'm a CASA both in Champaign County and Coles County. I'm in the Panther Club at Eastern Illinois, the Philanthropy of for Education.
I think it sounds like you're busier now than you probably were when you were working. Am I right, Jerry?
Well, but these are all choices I can make. You know, when I was working, I had certain expectations with the positions I held, principal, superintendent, whatever. Now I can make a choice that not only satisfies my desire to be a contributor, but to do it at my own pace. So.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks for that. Yeah. And I appreciate that. And Professor Steinmore, Liz, I wanted to bring you into this conversation, too, because I think when people think about retiring, there's a common perception they won't be working. They won't have anything to do. Jerry has sort of disproved that notion. I wanted to ask you about other advice you have for, it's not just filling up time, right? Because as Jerry said, he has a choice of what he's doing. And I think that in itself inherently makes him feel more fulfilled. You're nodding your head.
Yes, I'm definitely nodding my head. Jerry, you're brilliant. You've got it all figured out. And I think that's the idea of choice is really critical, is that retirement is really kind of the wrong word because it suggests that you're withdrawing from things, whereas it really gives you an opportunity for crafting a lifestyle that's maybe much richer than you could when you were working and you had certain obligations. So that's I think you've really got it figured out. I think generally I would echo the I have four pieces of advice generally, just to kind of keep it simple for people who are retiring to maintain health and happiness through late life. And one is to stay fit, exactly what you said. We know that physical exercise, aerobic exercise, helps blood get to the brain. It helps create new neurons. It helps keep us mentally healthy and happier. So that's absolutely important. And it doesn't take a lot. Just a little bit of, getting the heart rate up a couple of times a day is what the research says that we should do. Another thing is to keep mentally active and find challenges that we like. Finding activities that create mental challenges for us, so we're not bored, so that we're finding new aspects of ourselves and challenging ourselves in new ways to build new abilities. A third thing is to nurture those social relationships. There's a lot of research now that shows that as we get older, we may have smaller social networks, but they become richer. So we don't waste so much time with people that are not as important to us. We spend more time developing the relationships that matter. And then finally, cultivate a positive attitude. Is that the thing about getting being challenged is that you you want to be able to bounce back when things are frustrating. And just to say that and all this doesn't start when you retire. It should start much earlier.
Well, and that's part of the conversation we're having. Yeah. And Liz, I want to get back to the cognitive stuff in a minute. But Sharon, I think as someone who's listening to all of this might think about, all of these activities often require money. So I wonder if we can get back to kind of the idea of
the
planning of where you think people should be at different stages of their life. Just kind of general advice about that.
Sure. You know, money, like it or not, is the engine that drives your ability to do the fun things that Liz was talking about.
Well, crafting, even social networks, too.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think when you're spending time with people, sometimes that requires money.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think the standard advice is the earlier you can start saving with that end in mind, the better off you're going to be and the more flexibility you have. It's always a trade-off, right? You can either spend money now and not as much later, or you can put in place a saving discipline and really kind of create a balance now so that later on when you're crafting a new retirement lifestyle, whatever you want to call it, not retirement, but whatever that lifestyle looks like, you know, you have the resources to be able to craft that life the way that you'd like. So when you're younger, you should definitely, at least at a minimum, start saving in some way. I think that I'm seeing in our younger clients that they are actually pretty good about that. Now, it might not be a great percentage of their income, but it's something, which is better than what you're seeing nationally. Nationally, there's a problem.
We're going to have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Sharon and Liz. You can join us as well with your questions and comments. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show, and we'll pick up this conversation in just a minute. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about how to retire well. We've got two experts in studio with us talking about the health and finance of it. We're hearing your advice. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. We've been talking to people about this. In fact, earlier we spoke with Jerry Easton of Savoy. I wonder if we could hear a little bit of what Jerry Easton had to say about retiring well.
You really need to take care of your health. You got to make sure you live long enough to enjoy your retirement.
Thanks for that from Jerry. Again, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. We've been talking about health and money together, obviously, because, and one of the things, Liz Steinmurrow is in studio with us. She's at the Beckman Institute at the University of Illinois. One of the things we don't think about is that money can be a big stress on health, actually, especially in our older age, if we're not thinking about it. I wanted to ask you more about the cognitive side of things. We always hear, this is your research, deals a lot with cognitive, what we can do to sort of stave off cognitive decline. I think we always hear these studies, right? If you do Sudoku, it's going to like prevent your brain from getting Alzheimer's. I feel like that's a very generalized summation of things, but a lot of people think that. What does your research show?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Actually, you haven't seen research that shows Sudoku helps your mental capacity as you get older. You've seen advertisements.
That
so there are a lot of brain.
Say there are all these, if you do these crossword puzzles, if you do these things.
Yeah, sorry.
So that's not true.
No, that's really not true. So if you enjoy brain games and if you enjoy, you know, paying, I won't name companies to avoid libel suits or whatever, but if you want to pay them your hard-earned money from retirement to do those things you enjoy them, go ahead. But there's no evidence that that's going to help your cognitive abilities or memory. So the research literature on cognitive training suggests that you get to be better at exactly what you do. And so if you do crossword puzzles, you're probably better at crossword puzzles, or Sudoku, you're better at Sudoku. But that doesn't mean that you're going to do better at other kinds of, you know, everyday things in work or volunteering or whatever. So I would recommend cultivating a lot of different types of activities that you find mentally challenging. And reading is really a great one. We do a lot
of research. We heard that from one of our callers earlier.
Yeah. But, you know, if you think about it, when you read, the print disappears from the page and you find yourself in all kinds of different worlds and learn lots of different things. And so that's a very mentally engaging type of activity that can have long-term effects. So it's more of educational approaches rather than these games. So yeah, do brain training programs work? Yes, it's called school.
Okay. Oh, and so that's also a good idea of also in terms of there's lots of courses, there's lots of things available throughout the state.
Oh, yeah.
That are lifelong learning.
The OLLI
program
is great. Those right. are lifelong learning. There's one here. There's a wonderful large one here, and there's one in Bradley.
Right. So and there's
state.
So there's yeah. one in Peoria, and there's
oh I didn't know that.
Not at Bradley University.
Oh, okay.
Is that what you were saying?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So there's yeah. one of that's in Peoria and then also in the Champaign area. So that's a great idea. Sharon, I wanted to ask you from the financial planning standpoint, I think you say you've often heard from clients who say they wish they would have understood their investment strategy better. And I wanted to ask you about that. What advice you would offer clients maybe at different stages of life, thinking about their investment strategy and different vehicles for planning for retirement?
Sure. So really, when you think about investments, that's kind of the fuel to the engine that's kind of driving you toward retirement. And if you do nothing else in your investment strategy, how you're using your money to make money for you, you want to make sure that you look at the allocation between stocks and bonds. That's the first thing. You want to make sure that that is set up in a way that reflects what your goals are and what your appetite is for seeing peaks and valleys of return happen from time to time, which they do in the markets, both stock and bond markets. But, you know, figuring that piece out first is really important. Finding the proper amount of diversification, so not having all your eggs in one basket. That's also a hallmark of those who are successful in retirement, those two things. And then the third thing is making sure that the expenses that are associated with the way you invest are kept as low as possible. So if you really employ those three things, no matter where you're at in the spectrum of your financial life, that sets you up for success. Now, when you're younger, you can kind of just set it and forget it in a way. I mean,
long do you set and forget for? At what point do you have to start paying attention?
I think it's different for each person, but as you start to accumulate significant assets, and significant again is different for every person, but when you start really being able to see those balances grow significantly, that's a time where I think you need to do a checkup. And it honestly doesn't hurt to do a checkup every year of what's going on in your financial life. I think what we try to do with our clients and what I recommend to people who ask me about retirement is making sure that you get a roadmap in place. And a roadmap that is a good roadmap toward retirement can start when you're young and can be updated as you go throughout your working life, because life comes and goes and it throws you curveballs and that sort of thing.
One last question for you.
Yeah.
We just have about a minute left. And
sure.
I wanted to just ask you about yesterday we started this conversation talking about the Obama administration presenting roadmaps to states.
Mm-hmm.
Illinois has a law that mandates that makes it easier for private employees to also start saving. That's supposed to be fully implemented in 2017. When we're thinking about retirement investments and what the Obama administration has announced and what Illinois has, how should people be better informing themselves about that?
Well, I think that you should talk to your employer. So if you're working and you're saving or not saving, you should talk to your employer about what the investment options are, what the savings options are. I think it's important that if you don't have an employer-sponsored type of retirement plan, that you investigate an IRA, an individual retirement account. You can put away $5,500 a year into a savings vehicle like that. It is not taxed while it's growing. It's taxed when you take it out. So that's a really great place to start. And I think that with this plan that's coming into place for Illinois, it's going to bring to the forefront opportunities for people who are still in their working years to really think about saving more. And I think that's really honestly what is behind the initiative there.
It's just to get people to think about it more.
I think so.
Okay.
But it's going to be a mandated situation.
Right.
So for employers that have over 25 employees, it's definitely going to be a mandated thing. So we'll have to see how that shakes out come 2017.
Thanks to Sharon Allen. She's the president and co-founder of Sterling Wealth Management in Champaign. Also to Liz Stein-Morrow, who's at the Beckman Institute at the University of Illinois. Thanks for talking with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's an attempt right now in Cook County to define what art is in terms of what should be taxed and what shouldn't. And this argument's playing out in a Cook County courtroom because the county's asking small Chicago venues to pay back years' worth of amusement taxes that nightclubs were originally exempt from. Joining us to explain more is Lee Gaines, who's been covering this issue for the Chicago Reader. Lee, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Nyla. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you explain what's going on with this taxing in venues and back taxes? What's happening here?
Yeah, sure. So about a year ago, a few venues in the city were notified that they were being audited by the county's Department of Revenue. After that happened, the county came back and said, hey, you know what? You owe us approximately $200,000 each in these amusement taxes. And now the county has amusement taxes for venues, so that's 3% of ticket and cover charges. But there is an exemption for venues with a capacity under 750 or less, and also as long as those venues are booking live music and live cultural performances. What is at issue here is how the county is choosing to define live music. Mm. They're saying that the shows that these venues book do not count as quote-unquote fine art, and therefore they're not exempt from this tax.
So the question is that what the court's trying to decide is what is quote unquote fine art in terms of whether or not it, because if it's fine art, it's not taxed. Is that the point?
Yeah, but it's really the way the county hearing judge appears to be reading the code right now is in kind of a myopic sort of way. They give examples in the code, and this is another thing. I don't know when this code was written. It could have been written decades ago when our ideas of music were significantly different at that time. And so it gives examples of poetry readings and theater and opera and ballet as examples of disciplines commonly regarded as fine arts. And so she's trying to say because these performances don't fall under those specific categories, then they're not exempt. And what the attorneys for these venues are arguing is, look, all music should be exempt. Why are you drawing a line between the culture? Why are you trying to define the cultural value of one genre of music versus another?
I want to bring someone else in who's to this conversation who's also directly affected by this. We've been talking to Lee Gaines from the Chicago Reader. I want to bring Bruce Finkelman in. He's the owner of Beauty Bar in West Town in Chicago. It's a new venture that started by Finkelman and the family behind the Empty Bottle, which fans of live music in Chicago will know very well. Bruce, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us, too.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So your venue has been one of the most discussed venues in all of this. Let me ask, you know, Lee was saying in some cases people being asked to pay $200,000. How much is Cook County asking you to pay in taxes?
I believe it's $198,400 and change.
And have you ever had to pay a tax like this before?
Well, we haven't had to pay amusement tax. I mean, since the beginning of the inception of this business and the Empty Bottle, we've filed for exemptions from these amusement tax under the laws that we are under 750 venue and we're doing live cultural events.
So what was your reaction when you first heard about the county saying you're subject to this? What did you think?
Well, at first I thought that they just needed a reclarification of our position, which happens every once in a while. So last year when we received the notice, we went ahead and we scanned our occupancy card, sent in some materials of what we were booking and what we were presenting. We thought, once again, this would go away and, you know, there would be people pushing the right papers into the right place. But then we received a follow-up notice saying that they did indeed feel that we owed the money and the back, you know, and back taxes for the amusement. And you have to understand, this is a pass-through tax. So it's something that would be normally charged to the consumer on a ticket price.
Oh, but they're asking you for it in arrears. You've already collected on the ticket prices. Ah, okay.
Exactly.
So I know on October 17th, Bruce, the court asking for a live performance in the courtroom to get a taste of what value, for example, the music you put on or DJs or rap or rock and roll has to the community. Are you planning to have a performance in the courtroom?
We are planning to have the best show we could possibly have in a county building.
What is that going to be? Can you give us a preview?
Well, I got to tell you, the public outcry from this has been amazing. Everybody, all the artists in the community, Chance the Rapper, I mean, it's crazy how many people have stepped up and offered to be part of this. And we're just looking to put on the best possible preview to the administrative hearing of what we're trying to put across there. But the judge or the administrative hearing has kind of put it across there that she finds that it's going to be extremely difficult argument to put across there without getting some sort of musicologist or some sort of expert witness. So we'll be bringing somebody along to follow that as well.
Okay. Lee, you've covered music in the Chicagoland area for some time for The Reader. What is it like? What is the reaction from everyone else in the music scene about how this is all playing out? You know, Bruce said he's hearing from, obviously, his patrons. What are you hearing from other club owners, from other music fans in Chicago about this?
So everyone's basically livid. I can tell you when we first started writing about it, and especially after the second story, when the hearing officer appeared to sort of double down on her argument that this is not live music or culturally valuable by the county standards, I had just my whole feed, my Facebook feed, with tons and tons of my musician friends outraged that some hearing officer in the county was basically discounting what they do as not valuable art. And they're really worried. They're really worried because they rely on these venues to showcase their art and what they do. And if the county, by levying this tax and the back taxes and the penalties, ends up shutting down these venues, I don't know what that means for Chicago's live music scene. Certainly nothing good.
Bruce, would this be, if this was levied on you guys, would you be able to survive?
I think it'd be very difficult. I think this would be a death blow to a lot of venues, and it would make it very difficult to keep the doors open. I mean, it's really disheartening to see, you know, the empty bottle is turning 25 this year, and to hear the administrative hearing officer tell us that the music that we've been booking for all over these years, you know, that there's real validity to it, that it's not fine art, to question what we've spent our years kind of curating. I mean, it's really disheartening.
Well, but it really, how much of it is about judging the art and really about Cook County maybe needing more tax revenue, right? Do you see that as maybe this is a situation where they're just trying to tax more people? Bruce?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead, Lee, if you want to answer.
Yeah, I mean, that has been the supposition. There is a Cook County commissioner right now, John Fritchie, who is trying to work to change the ordinance to reflect the city of Chicago's ordinance, which does carve out exemptions for these venues. These venues do not pay amusement tax to the city of Chicago, and that's longstanding for over a decade. So he's trying to change the county's ordinance to reflect that, to match up with the city. So that's an interesting point in this whole story, that the county is trying to litigate something that the city decided long ago was not an issue, that, yeah, of course these venues can have this exemption.
Yeah, so we'll see how that plays out. Lee Gaines with the Chicago Reader, Bruce Finkelman with Beauty Bar. Thanks for being with us. You're listening to The 21st. was Trumberry. They're a jazz band. They're performing this Saturday at Normal Theater in Normal. It's part of a screening for Nightbird Song. That's a movie about the late jazz saxophonist Thomas Chapin. In studio with me now, as you could hear, is the full band, saxophonist Glenn Wilson. Glenn, can you introduce everybody else?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. On the trombone, the trom part of Trumberry, the fabulous Jim Pugh. On bass, Armin Baudouin on the bass. Armin also plays cello with us. Ricardo Flores is playing the drums. Dorothy Martirano on the violin. And we also have a cellist on the concert who couldn't be here today, so we're one cello short.
Can you tell me a little bit about the story behind the music that you guys are playing?
Yeah. Well, Thomas was a good friend of mine from New York, and we played in Lionel Hampton's band together, and sort of lost touch when I left New York City, and I really wasn't aware of this record at all, and I found it in a box set that his widow put out of some of his more obscure recordings, and I really loved the music, and I knew that Dorothy and Armin could really bring something to it, playing the violin and the cello, and so I contacted his widow, and she sent us some of the music, and we rearranged it for our instrumentation, which didn't include, of course, trombone, and yeah, so we recorded it in 2012, and there's really sort of an underground movement of keeping Thomas Chapin's music alive. A lot of people have participated in this over the years. So his sister-in-law is a documentary filmmaker from Hawaii, Emmy Award-winning filmmaker, Stephanie Castillo, and she's been for years wanted to do a movie about Thomas. So it started with a Kickstarter campaign, which I contributed to, and a lot of other people did too, obviously, and then went from there. And the movie debuted this spring at the Cannes Film Festival. It's been at the Nice Festival. It won Best Story at the Nice Film Festival. It's had a few showings in the New York, Connecticut area, but this will definitely be the first showing in the Midwest at all. And so we're very excited about it. And I have a am I going on too long? I can keep talking. I have a 501c3 called Further Jazz, Inc., and I applied for a grant for the Town of Normal Harmon Arts Grant. So we're going to do this at the historic Normal Theater in Normal. We're going to play the music before the film and then show the film and then have a talk back afterwards with the filmmaker.
Wow. So you're going to be doing the concerts at 6. Mm-hmm. The film is going to be at 7 o'clock on Saturday night. Can you give us an idea of Thomas Chapin? You talked about how there's sort of this movement of artists who want to keep him alive. He was 40 when he died.
Right.
It was the height of his career. He had leukemia. This was in 98. Can you give folks a sense of his style of...
He was one of the few players at the time, I think, that really transcended the two jazz worlds, which were the uptown and the downtown scene. The downtown scene was more avant-garde type of music, a club called the Knitting Factory, who also had the Knitting Factory record label. And Tom was at the avant-garde of that label, but he also could play straight ahead what we call more traditional jazz. He played in Lionel Hampton's orchestra for years and did that, and he recorded several CDs of more traditional jazz music, the stuff that some of us play now. But he was in both worlds, and he was really a unique artist in that he always was in the moment. You always felt like he was playing his heart out at all times. It didn't matter what he was doing. It was so inspiring to hear him play, and you get to see a lot of this in the film. There's a lot of live scenes of him playing at festivals and things like that. He was just so alive, and it was just amazing to watch him even. So I forget what your question was, but did I answer it?
You did. Do you all mind playing something else for us? Are you going to maybe give us a little bit of a preview?
Yeah, we're going to play this tune on the concert, and this is called Haywire. It's the title cut from Tom's CD, Haywire. Normally, in a concert, this will be about an 8 or 9 minute version. We're going to play.
So you're going to give us an abbreviated version.
We're going to give you a 45 minute version. And you can. No, we're going to give you a 3 minute version. 3 or 4 minutes. We're going to try.
Thank you.
Was Tron Berry, and a little bit of a preview of what's going to happen on Saturday night at the Normal Theater. They are playing as part of a Nightbird Song is a documentary about the jazz saxophonist Thomas Chapin. It's going to be screened. There's going to be a concert beforehand that Tron Berry is going to be doing a talk back after. It's actually all free, as saxophonist Glenn Wilson was just telling us. Glenn, for people who maybe aren't as familiar with the jazz world, maybe you're just learning about Thomas Chapin, how much do you think his legacy lives on today?
Well, it lives on in a lot of players who are inspired by him. That's the thing. There's a lot of musicians we all play with that are just not that inspiring. They're competent. They're really good musicians. But when you play with somebody like that, that really gives it their all every time, it's contagious. And jazz is such a personal music that, you know, when somebody shows up like that, and it's like a shooting star. I mean, we could name the people in the history of jazz that fit this mold, that came and really made a statement and then left.
Can you tell me a little bit about Tron Berry? How long have you guys been together and playing?
Since about 2010, maybe. We did this recording in 2011. Or no, we did the recording in 2010, so we had to be together before that. It came out in 2012, so yeah, about, I don't know, 8-10 years.
And you guys are from all across Central Illinois.
Yes, we are. Well, yeah, we're all from all over, but most of us live here now, or in the mid-central Illinois area. Our cellist for this concert will be Adriana Ransom, who's the cello professor at Illinois State University. She'll be playing with us for the first time. Tamika Reed was the cello player on the CD. She was a grad doctoral student here at U of I at the time, or a master's student. And Jim is on the faculty here, of course, but...
And how often do you guys get to play together?
Not often enough.
Twice a year.
That's a standard answer. No, we play over at the Iron Post occasionally, and we do other concerts here and there, but not enough. And this music is so challenging that every time we play this, we have to pull out the music and remember it again. Whereas a lot of the gigs we do, we just have it in our head and we can just go and play. This is something that's more, for us, more like a concert piece almost, even though there's a lot of free parts to it. And that's why the music is so interesting, I think, for Thomas's music. It's written, it's composed. Some of it sounds like folk music, some of it sounds like classical, and some of it sounds like the craziest jazz you would hear. So it's got a little bit of everything.
So the Normal Theater is screening Nightbird Song. It's a documentary about Thomas Chapin. Saturday night, the concert's at 6, the film's at 7. There's a talk back after the performance, of course, by Tron Berry, who's in studio with us. Before we say goodbye, what are you going to play for us as we say goodbye?
We're going to play a piece from Thomas's Devil's Hop Yard Suite. It's called Hoofin'. And we'll, again, just do a little brief version of this.
Great, thank you. That does it for us this week. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app if you search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. All of those links, every other way to contact us if you want to give us feedback via phone, email, follow us on social media, that's all at our website, 21stshow.org. We're produced by Christine Herman, Philip Kisibika, and Sean Newman. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft with help from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our news director. Thanks to Joe Yoon and Nick Vance from the University of Illinois Social Media Analytics Lab for their research help. And special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.